iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobalNews.com.
iGlobal Radio, brought to you by iGlobalNews.com.
Hello and welcome to the iMoney Show right here on iGlobal Radio. My name's Tony Patty and today I am joined by Bob Singh, who is the owner, director of Chess Mortgages. He is an award-winning mortgage expert and strategist. He is also a will writer and estate planner. Financial planning, life insurance and critical illness is one of his expertise, including income protection and also buildings and contents insurance, personal and business that is, and also sales and lettings of residential and commercial property. Now, the motto at Chess Mortgages, the company that Bob runs, is the right advice, first time, every time. And in this first part or series of programs that we have with Bob Singh, we're going to be talking about residential mortgages today. Bob, a very warm welcome to you, and thank you for joining us today right here on iGlobal Radio.
Thank you for having me, Tony.
So residential mortgages, Bob, are the largest and one of the most common forms of credit in the UK and make it possible for millions of us to buy our homes. And wherever you're buying, unless you're lucky enough to have hundreds of thousands of pounds in savings, you'll need to actually borrow a great deal of money. And this is where a residential mortgage comes in, which I'm hoping you're going to be able to give us the ins and outs of today. We're going to be talking about what is a residential mortgage, how it works, deposits, loan to value, interest, and so on, which is, of course, a subject that you are an expert in. So let's kick off then. What exactly is a residential mortgage?
Well, quite simply, it's a mortgage on your main residence. So it's the large loan secured on the property itself. That could be the house or an apartment. And it's for you to live in. So it's not meant for any sort of subletting or investment. It's where you, your family, intend to live there for the term of that mortgage.
Whether you're a first-time buyer, moving home or remortgaging, is a residential mortgage the right type of mortgage that one will need, depending, of course, on one's circumstances?
A large majority of the mortgages are residential because people live in their own homes. If you're buying to rent out, then that obviously is a buy-to-let mortgage. It's not a residential mortgage. But if you're living in your property and you are either buying it or refinancing it, which we call a remortgage, or even moving home, selling your house and buying another one, that involves a mortgage. And that's a residential mortgage. And the important thing to do recognize here or to remember is that residential mortgages are regulated by the FCA. They are regulated by the government.
So with a residential mortgage, the home must be used as a residence by the borrowers, I understand, and not rented out to tenants or used for commercial purposes. So how does one go about choosing between a fixed rate, a variable or a tracker mortgage? Try and decipher that for us, because I, for one, am pretty confused about this.
Okay, well, most people are because there are so many options. But let's explain the rate options first of all.
Okay.
Now, a standard variable rate is what you would pay if you didn't choose any sort of product at all. Now, the standard variable rate as of today for most lenders is 3.99. Call it 4%. Now, if you choose a variable rate, you are vastly overpaying over the odds. Because if you choose a good fixed rate, for example, if you have, for example, a big deposit like 40%, the rates are below 1%, and you can fix that for 5 years. Now, historically, we are in a very low interest rate era. Never before have rates been this low, Tony.
Yeah.
And now if you're fixing for the next 5 years, the rates are absolutely magnificent. So it would make good sense to do so. A tracker rate is one that's linked to the Bank of England base rate. So at the moment, Bank of England base rate is at 0.1% and has been for many, many months. The government dropped it very, very low to stimulate the economy. So that could change any time. So therefore, you'll be linked to that tracker rate. Now, normally you would pay a margin above it. It could be 1% above base rate. It could be 2%. But whenever that rate moves, you move with it. So that's called a tracker rate. And again, that could be a lifetime tracker. So that could be for the full duration of your mortgage, or it could be for a 2, 3, or 5 year period as well. So there's many, many products you can choose from. So the most popular is fixed rate right now because they're very, very competitive. Some people do prefer tracker rates because with a fixed rate, you're locked in. Now, there are some fixed rates where you're not locked in, but 99% of the time when you choose a fixed rate, you're pledging to the lender that you'll stay with them for the next 2, 3, or 5 years. And if you leave before that, there's a penalty. So you've got to be very careful that your length of the fixed rate fits in with your plans for the future. Otherwise, there could be a sting in the tail if you repay that mortgage early. And same with trackers and other forms of mortgages. There's normally a penalty involved. So if you don't want a penalty, then you have to pay a little bit more for that flexibility. But those options are available too.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal Radio is the brand new hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. News, views, interviews, wellness, money matters, and much, much more. Tune in to iGlobal Radio at iGlobalNews.com. We are talking to Bob Singh from Chess Mortgages today, and we are learning all about residential mortgages and how they actually work. And Bob, my next question to you is this: how a residential mortgage actually works. So when taking out a residential mortgage, there are many things to take into consideration, such as, and I'll do this from the top of my head, the deposit, your monthly repayments, and also, I imagine, the interest rate that is actually accrued as well. Would you like to go into some detail about that with us today?
Yes. When you buy a property, you've got to consider your own position, because no two stories are similar, no two positions and aspirations are similar. So we look at you. We see what you're trying to achieve and what you've got behind you to achieve that. Because firstly, the days of 100% mortgages are long gone. Yeah. Those days no longer exist. And only very recently, because of COVID, have 95% schemes come on board. And it was a government incentive to allow first-time buyers an easy leg up onto the property market with just 5%. So when it comes to interest rates, they're very much linked to the size of your deposit. Now, a little deposit means more risk for the lender, and a big deposit means less risk for a lender. So the bigger deposit you can offer, the better your product or your interest rate will be. So first-time buyers typically don't have big savings, so they have to go for a 95% product. And the good thing is, those rates have dropped sharply in the last few months as well. So if you're a first-time buyer, now's not a bad time to get on the ladder. Now, today, the stamp duty period is no longer. There's no freebies now. So you're back to the standard £125,000 exemption, unless the government introduced something else for first-time buyers. Okay, so you must factor in the costs of buying as well. It's not just the deposit. There's stamp duty. There's solicitor's costs. Maybe a survey fee, but generally lenders throw some freebies in to entice you, or a bit of a cashback at the end to help you along your way. Now, having decided what your deposit is, we must look at your credit file, because having a deposit isn't just the start of it. Yes, it's essential, but we look at your credit file. We need to know that there are no missed payments or late payments or county court judgments or defaults. And sometimes people come to us swearing blind their credit file is clear, but when we do a check, lo and behold, there's something on there. So we must make sure that's clear, because we have to know your credit file, because if there is an issue, then we need to go to the right lender. What we don't want to do is do a scattergun approach, apply here, there, everywhere, hoping it goes through, when we know there's something that, you know, on your file. So we go and make it quite a specific application, because applying in too many places at the same time ruins your credit file as well. It lowers your score, which most people don't realize. So we need to be quite specific. We need to know your circumstances so we can make a pretty educated decision as to which lender to go with. Okay? So, clear credit file, 5% deposit. The next step is to work out how much you can afford. Now, most lenders work on your gross income and they apply a multiple. That standard multiple for first-time buyers is roughly 4.5 times your single or joint gross income. Okay. So if you're buying with your partner, it gives you a bit of a boost. If you're buying on your own, then we're reliant on just your salary. So 4.5 is the starting point. If your job is of a specific type, for example, if you're a doctor, a professional, you know, dentist or a veterinarian, an actuary, for those sort of categories where they know that the pay scales are, you know, will rise very quickly, the lenders do take a bit of a view. So those categories of first-time buyers can often get 5 or 6 times income, more than the standard. So it depends on what you need. And obviously, we have to look at affordability and the monthly payments, because a mortgage typically is over 25 years.
Mm.
It doesn't have to be. It can be 30, 35, right up till the age of your retirement. So 67, 68 or 70, most lenders are comfortable these days for lending you that length of mortgage. Now, the longer you take on your mortgage, the lower your monthly payment. But on the other side of the coin, more interest payments over the term. So, you know, you have to make an educated decision. How long do you want to be mortgage? How long do you want your mortgage for? Do you want to mortgage until your last working day? Or are you happy to have it over a shorter period? Yeah. So if you can afford the mortgage, then we look at your other expenses on top. Your council tax, your electric, your gas, your water bills, your transport, your food bills, Sky TV and all that. So, you know, all these are over and above your mortgage cost.
Yes.
So we need to do an affordability assessment. And that's exactly what the lender does in the background, because they know how much it costs to live in a flat, a two-bedroom flat, a house. So they've got lots of statistics behind them to work out what it will cost you to live in that house. So they want to be comfortable that you can afford to pay not only the mortgage, but also afford to live. Now, behind the scenes, the FCA has told all the lenders that they are responsible for assessing affordability, not the broker, not the client. So that's why lenders are very, very careful when they come to lend on mortgages to make sure that they're not over-lending, because the worst thing they, or the last thing they want to do is over-lend, you know, burden you with debt. And that's not what they're in the business for. They want to lend responsibly. So we look at all those factors. So it's a fairly lengthy process. We have to go through a lot of paperwork and compliance and make sure there's a lot of money laundering checks. So we make sure the deposit is clean, so to speak. We make sure you're the person you say you are, because these days over the internet and email, we need to make sure, you know, Tony Patty is Tony Patty.
Indeed.
You need to check your passports. Yeah. Verify you electronically, etc. Because sadly, a lot of fraud goes on.
Yes, it does. Bob, what is known as a loan to value (LTV)? What is that term, and what does it represent?
Yeah, LTV is a very common term in the mortgage world. What it stands for is loan to value. Okay, it's your mortgage size expressed as a percentage of the property value. For example, if you have a £500,000 property and your loan is £450,000, that's a 90% LTV. If your mortgage is £250,000 on a £500,000 property, that's 50% LTV. Now, interest rates are set according to LTV. So the lower the LTV, the better the interest rate. The higher the LTV, for example, 95%, the higher the interest rate. So it's risk related.
We are talking to Bob Singh from Chess Mortgages today, and we are talking about residential mortgages and deciphering the maze of information that surrounds a residential mortgage.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
iGlobal is one-of-a-kind multimedia platform for all things global Indian, from the latest community news to the big political interviews, from entertainment and fashion to personal wealth and wellness. iGlobal is where the vibrant Indian diaspora gets seen and heard. Log on at iglobalnews.com. Bob, I'd like to ask you about interest. Now, interest, I understand, is charged on the value of the mortgage owed, and interest is the cost of money or the fee a lender charges for providing the service of lending you money. So what does it mean to having to repay a mortgage plus when it comes to residential mortgage, the rate of interest, and how do they work where it comes to fixed rates, tracker mortgages, variable rate mortgages? I know you've explained this to a certain degree already, but I'd like to go into a little bit more detail to understand this with you.
Sure. Well, interest is charged by every lender. You know, they're in the business of lending money, and interest is essentially their profit. So they set that according to the risk profile, how much money they've got, because many lenders work in different ways. Now, the larger lenders have people like you and me who save with those banks and building societies, and it's that money that's lent onto mortgage borrowers. And as you know, you get hardly anything for your money in a bank or building society these days. So that's why the bank need pay you nothing. You know, interest rates are so low for savers. So banks use that money to lend onwards. So they can even charge a little bit more than what they give you and still make a profit. So that's why rates are so low at the moment. So, and it also depends whether they've borrowed that money from the money markets, because money market money is expensive. So those sort of lenders that need to borrow from the money markets need to lend that on at a slightly higher rate.
I see.
Yeah. So then they need to make a margin, obviously. That's, you know, they're in the business for money. But when you get an illustration from a lender or your advisor, you should pay particular attention to the costs added on to the product or the mortgage. Yes, you'll pay the interest rate, but there will also be a bank arrangement fee. There'll be money transfer fees, evaluation fee, and all those extra costs are quoted in the form of an APR, an annual percentage rate. So that's how you're meant to compare one lender versus the other, is firstly to compare APRs, because if the APR is abnormally high, there may be some hidden costs that you may not be aware of. So you've got to study your illustration. It's called a key facts illustration, KFI.
Okay.
And you must compare one against the other to see what is one bank charging, what's the other bank charging, and how they compare, and how they compare in the APR as well as the rate itself. Now, two lenders might have exactly the same rate, but the APRs might be different. And that's a warning sign that there might be some costs added onto the mortgage. Now, most lenders charge an arrangement fee, typically 995, and it could be 1,995. Now, they will typically add that onto your loan. That's not assessed within the affordability. So if you borrowed 95% and the bank is charging you, for example, £995, they will add that to your mortgage. So you're paying interest on that sum as well, if you add that fee onto the mortgage. Hmm. So you have the option of paying it up front as well. And so you don't pay interest on it for the life of the mortgage. So that could be a quite smart move by paying that yourself. But generally, people add it onto the mortgage, and that little extra bit added on also is attracting interest for the term of the mortgage. So you must be aware of that. And yes, if you've chosen a fixed rate, you know exactly what your payments are going to be for the next 2, 3, 5 years. Whereas if you choose a tracker or a variable rate, those payments could go up and they could go down. But at the moment, the way the rates are going down is very unlikely. If you're choosing a variable rate, there's probably only one way it's going to go, and which is up. So, but people choose a fixed rate because of budgeting, and they know exactly what they're going to pay month in, month out, so they can plan their finances better. And we do a lot of fixed rates. Now, we choose five-year rates because I think that's a sensible time frame, and you pay the bank fee once in that five-year period. Now, some people and some advisors recommend two-year products, but then the rate might be slightly lower on the two-year deal, but you're going to be paying the bank fee three times in that five-year period. Ah. And people don't realize that. They think, yeah, I'll go for a low rate now, but they don't realize in 2 years, they'll have to pay the bank fee again to renew that product. And then at the end of 4 years, so you've paid it three times. So, you know, you need to do some maths and make sure you're going for the right product.
Log on to iGlobalNews.com. iGlobal, the go-to multimedia platform for and about global Indians.
So, Bob, I'd like to ask you about monthly repayments. There'll be monthly repayments that will need to be met until the mortgage is repaid. Not being able to meet these repayments could result in losing your home. We know that. And these repayments do increase or decrease with the amount of interest being charged. But you have a thing called full repayments and interest-only repayments. Both options have their pros and cons. Which one you choose depends on whether you want a cheaper monthly repayment or to work towards being mortgage-free faster. With your background and expertise, which one would you choose or recommend?
Okay. Again, it varies from client to client. So we look at your goals and what you're trying to achieve. Now, it used to be the case that interest-only mortgages were readily available. I'm talking about before 2014, before the mortgage market review changed all that. So in 2014, the banks became solely responsible for assessing affordability. And they didn't give interest-only mortgages in those states. They said, it's a repayment mortgage, take it or leave it. Yeah, the repayment mortgage is capital and interest, and it's worked over your mortgage term. So every month, your monthly payment comprises of capital and interest. Now, with a repayment mortgage, in the early years of your mortgage, you're paying mainly interest. So a very small percentage of your monthly payment is capital, and the majority is interest. But as you go into the term of your mortgage, you know, more and more of your monthly payment is then capital, and less is interest. And the result is a 25-year mortgage reaches halfway stage, not in year 12 and a half, but in year 17 or 18. So it's not a linear line on a graph. It's a sort of a slow curve. And the longer you keep that mortgage, the quicker the mortgage drops towards the end of that particular term. The last few years are virtually all capital. There's hardly any interest being paid. So it's a safest way to have a mortgage is a repayment mortgage, because you know if you keep on paying the monthly mortgages, mortgage payment every month for the next 25 years, you will have no mortgage at the end. Okay. Interest-only mortgages have made a bit of a comeback. Yeah, the FCA said, look, you know, interest mortgages aren't bad news. They can suit some people. They're not totally illegal. So the banks are now happily considering interest-only mortgages, but they have their own criteria. And that criteria varies enormously. So some will say, okay, if you're a high earner, for example, if your salary is above £75,000, yes, you can have an interest-only mortgage because you're a big earner, you're likely to have better savings, and you could pay down the mortgage by making bullet payments or annual reductions, because most good mortgages have an overpayment option.
Yep.
Up to 10%, and sometimes up to 20% of the loan if you can manage it. So they say a high earner is okay to have an interest-only mortgage, which is fine, okay? And many high earners go for that option because they'd rather use that money for something else. They'd rather put that capital to other use, school fees, other investments, you know, whatever they want to do.
Yep.
So the lender's happy with that, knowing they'll get their money and at the end of 25 years, okay? Now, some people with large portfolios of property in the background also tend to use interest-only because they know at the end of 25 years, they haven't got to worry about anything. They've got properties in the background which they can sell and pay back that mortgage in year 25 or whenever that term ends.
Yeah.
So interest-only works for them as well. And some lenders say, okay, not everybody earns £75,000, so we understand that. Not everybody's a high flyer. So if Joe Bloggs, Mr. Normal, and Mr. and Mrs. Normal want an interest-only mortgage, if they can demonstrate they have enough equity in their property now to buy them a two-bed flat somewhere locally, they'll give you an interest-only mortgage, because what they don't want is for you to get to the end of 25-year term, have no equity in the property, and then be forced to sell it. So if you are forced to sell it, you should have enough money to go and buy yourself a flat, because most people I know, I've seen lots of cases, forget to plan or save alongside an interest-only mortgage. And when it comes to the end of the mortgage, they haven't got anything, they can't repay it. And the bank says, hang on, you said you would save, you would plan, and you haven't. So what are we going to do now? So most people are forced to sell a property when they're 65 or 70, at an age where they don't really want to. All their families with them, their children maybe, you know, living with them. They don't want to leave the area. So it does cause problems if you don't have an end plan.
Thank you for listening to iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. Find out more on iGlobalNews.com. iGlobalNews.com.
Bob Soong, you are the managing director and owner of Chess Mortgages. And for those people who are thinking about residential mortgages, remortgaging, moving home, or as a first-time buyer, what advice is available to them through yourselves at Chess Mortgages, and how can people go about getting in touch with you?
Yeah, you can Google Chess Mortgages. That'll give you our contact details and lots of reviews from happy customers. If you're in the mortgage market, then really you've got to go to an advisor who is firstly whole of market, who can approach many, many lenders on your behalf, because your companion, we hold your hand. So we'll fight your corner with the underwriters and make sure that case goes through.
Please note, past performance is not a guarantee of future performance. All investments can fall as well as rise in value, and you can lose some or all of your money. Additionally, this podcast does not constitute an investment recommendation.
iGlobal Radio, the hub of podcasts for and about global Indians. From news and views to wellness, entertainment, money matters, and much, much more. On air at iGlobalNews.com.